Recorded from the M0A studios in sunny Ocala, Florida, M0A.com presents Inspire Aviation. Welcome to episode number 11 of Inspire Aviation. My name is Scott Carson, and I'll be your host. So today we are going back to our typical interview format. But before I get into that, if you have any questions for us, whether it be M0A, a question for me to answer on our podcast, or if you just need some help with your flight training or starting your flight training, please reach out to us. That's what we're here for. You can email me at Scott, S-C-O-T-T, at M0A.com, M-E-Z-E-R-O-A.com, and my email address will also be in the show notes. Today I interviewed Kyle Chmielewski. And Kyle is actually one of our CFI partners. So at M0A.com, we offer our program to different CFIs and different flight schools. So Kyle offers the M0A Ground School Academy to students. So one of the neat things about my position is I get to meet instructors and schools of all different types and sizes. And as you get to know these people and these companies, you really start to see who's a good instructor, who really cares. And Kyle is one of those individuals, and that's one of the reasons we've been able to not just develop a business relationship, but also a friendship. He takes what he does very seriously. He has a true joy of flying. He, you know, a lot of people get a corporate job or they go fly for an airline, and then that's all they do. And that is fine. But there's another breed that while they still get to fly the big jets or the cool, sexy corporate jets, they still like going up in a 172 or a Piper Archer and flying around the area or still giving instructions. And Kyle does that. The other thing you'll hear in his story is Kyle is very approachable. He encourages his students to talk to him whenever they're having a difficult time. And you'll hear in the story there are different milestones and there are training where his students can get burnt out, where they can get frustrated. And he talks about his job is to recognize when those times are coming up and continue to push the students further. So from a instructor standpoint, this is what you want to be looking for, these characteristics. And you'll just hear it in Kyle's voice. The other thing from a student perspective, and here's in his story, you'll hear about his first lesson where he almost got sick in the airplane, where he accidentally put his feet on the toe brakes and almost caused the plane to swerve off the runway on takeoff. And here he is, a CFI and a corporate pilot. Those things didn't get in his way, but the theme that we want to point out is no matter how professional someone is, the professional that you see today, they had challenges in their flight training. No one's exempt from that, and you'll hear that in Kyle's story. If you are a student or want to become a pilot in the Lansing or the Michigan area, get a hold of Kyle. I'm going to put all of his information in the show notes. And even if you're not in the area, if you just want to check out his website and his blog, his website is iflyplanes.com, and his blog is trueflying.com. And I'll put that in the show notes as well as his number. If you just have a question, if you just want to hear more about his story, reach out to him. He's, again, that's what makes him a great CFI, is because this stuff is important to him and he is extremely approachable. So here is Kyle's story.
My name is Kyle Chmielewski. I'm 25 years old. I'm a captain for a corporate flight department. I live in Lansing, Michigan with my fiance, Jessica. I was born in Florida, did most of my flight training down there in a city called Sarasota. Like Jason at M0A, I ended up washing airplanes for flight time, working at the local FBO during the summertime, and then even down working in a pilot shop. What ended up happening is I got my instrument rating and a private multi-engine rating in Sarasota, ended up getting my final ratings of my commercial and my CFIs at ATP in Atlanta and Jacksonville, Florida.
Very good. So, Kyle, going back and looking at your childhood, early childhood, do you remember when aviation kind of first resonated with you? Was there a moment where you thought, wow, if I could do this as a career, or maybe this is something that's really, really special to me. Anything come to mind?
When I was 4 years old, my father worked at UPS, St. Pete, Florida, and he was in charge of telling everyone where to put the large cargo pallets for the weight balance of the airplane. And he was on the 757, the DC-8s, and the A300s, and sometimes I would actually go with him to work, and he'd leave me in the cockpit for a while with the pilots in there. So that was pretty much my first idea that I wanted to be a pilot. And then about a year later, my grandmother got a new Dell computer, and it came with Microsoft Flight Simulator 95, and that's really what helped me get going with flying.
Oh, that's perfect. What? So when did you take your first lesson? Do you remember how old you were?
Actually, I took my first Young Eagles ride when I was 12 years old. And a year later, my uncle got a gift of the private pilot kit, one of those Jeppesen kits.
Right.
And he ended up not wanting to learn how to fly, so he gave it to me. So right around my 13th birthday is when I had my first lesson.
Wow. How old were you when your dad used to take you to work and used to see the big UPS airplanes?
I was 4 when he was at UPS, and then 5 when I got the first simulator. And then when I was in kindergarten, actually, when we had our little kindergarten graduation, they were videotaping all the kids and asking them what they wanted to be when they were older. And all the other kids said they wanted to be a policeman, a fireman, or an astronaut. And I was the one kid that said that I wanted to be a pilot.
Your first flight, I guess you said you were 13 when you did your first, or no, you were how old, you were 12 when you did your first Young Eagles flight?
12 was Young Eagles, and then 13 for the first real lesson.
So for your, we'll go to your first real lesson. Describe what that was like when you actually got to sit inside a real grown-up airplane, and did the CFI let you take over the controls? Did it go like you thought it would? Because I know for me, you know, always sitting on the ground looking up at airplanes and being like, I want to be up there. The experience once you're in the cockpit is really quite different. Can you describe that a little bit?
Yeah, actually, I got nearly sick on my first flight, and we flew out to a place called Arcadia, and I didn't really know about pedals and brakes, and I was a genius who decided to put my foot on the top of the brake pedal in a little 152, and we went almost right off the side of the runway. So I was sick, and I almost caused us to go off the runway, so it was a great first lesson for me.
Did you ever, now with that, because that's an experience, like one, getting sick, and then two, like, you know, just sitting up there and resting your feet, and they happen to be on the tow brakes. Did you for a second think, whoa, maybe this isn't for me, or gosh, I don't know if I can do this? Did you have any of that, or did
no,
you just?
My instructor was nice enough not to freak out and get nervous and scared and upset at me, so I don't think I really thought about it that big of a deal. I definitely didn't really realize how serious it could have been, because he took the airplane pretty quick.
Right. And then what about this? Was there any worry about with the motion sickness?
For the first 2 or 3 lessons, there was worry about it. So what we did was we had 30-minute lessons instead of 1-hour lessons. And after about 3 lessons, I finally felt pretty normal.
Oh, that's pretty good. And just, you know, and that's such a good story, too, because as ambassadors of aviation, whether it's a CFI, whether it's someone, you know, a private pilot takes people up, you know, you look at that time in your life where you stepped on the tow brake, you felt nauseous, someone could have just really made you feel like crap, or like this gentleman did, said, hey, don't worry, this happens to everybody. Next time we go up, we'll do little flights until you get your feet underneath you, until you start feeling normal. I mean, that just the fact that he took the time to do that is pretty impressive. So obviously, being young, I know you mentioned washing airplanes, things like that. How did you actually pay for your flight training?
I was lucky enough to have a family that not only would support me financially with flying, but they also supported my dream of flying. So they helped pay for my first private pilot license and my instrument rating is what they did. So that was how I did it for the most part, for the private instrument. But with the instrument portion, what ended up happening was meeting people by washing the plane and making a little bit of money there. You also met guys who wanted you to fly with them as a safety pilot. So that's how I started to log some of that cross-country time that's required for the instrument rating.
Now, that's so smart. And I just one of the themes that as a company at M0A.com and also with Inspire Aviation that just really makes or breaks people's, whether it be a career, whether it be just carrying out that hobby or that passion, is staying connected. And that's, you know, you go wash planes as, you know, kind of a labor of love, but then you're providing a service for people, but you get so much more. Just like you said, all those relationships that you got and, you know, just meeting people who own airplanes and who need safety pilots, that's so cool. So once you got a few lessons under your belt, was training different than what you expected at all?
I think the studying probably was the hardest part because I was already not the best student in school. All I wanted to do was fly. I never wanted to have to do the grip work, whether I was in my high school or at the airport. That was probably my biggest challenge that I had.
Yeah, no, I think a lot of people struggle with that, especially once they get farther in their training. They realize, like, oh, gosh, I got to stop now, and I got to spend time on my written. But, yeah, I know for me, I really, really underestimated the amount of book work. Obviously, I knew, you know, hey, I got to study for this written. I got to prepare for this check ride, especially the oral part. But I really underestimated, you know, the studying, the pre-flight, the studying before the flight, the kind of reviewing after the flight, and spending time in the book, just, you know, let alone all the stuff you need to learn, but how much confidence it can help you develop. And it was one of those things, once, if I could devote 10 minutes to studying, I was okay. But that first 10 minutes was painful. Did you kind of have the same experience? Or how did you, you know, someone who hated studying or maybe wasn't a good student, how were you able to kind of change that when it came to aviation?
My final instructor is really what made me study. She really made me study. She would try every single way to make me learn, whether she would make note cards. She'd go with me at the airport, in the pilot lounge, in the ground school with me there. She'd meet me at bookstores, restaurants, whatever it took, and whenever I had time, she would do so I get my license out of the way.
Now, how did you find, I mean, because that's not the same instructor that first took you up, correct?
I think I had over 8 instructors when I got my private, maybe even 10, because it was over the period. I started when I was 13, so it was about a 4-year period because I got it right after my 17th birthday.
So, but did you interview instructors? Because just those two stories that you told, I mean, those are two good experiences where someone really kind of, from an instructor standpoint, really gave it their all and put your best interest and your pursuit ahead of maybe being tired or maybe wanting to spend more time with their family. Were all your CFI experiences like that, or did you have some ones that made things difficult?
I think most of them were actually pretty good because my parents realized that I'd probably be able to communicate better with someone in their early 20s. So those were the instructors that we went after for the most part.
Yeah.
I never really had any bad instructors, just some odd stage check instructors that would get frustrated with little things that made no sense to me, really. Most of the old school guys, I'd say.
Right. So during your training, I know we kind of talked about that first flight, but during your training, and even as a professional pilot, have you ever had one of those kind of old crap moments where something scared you or intimidated you and you thought, oh, man, maybe this isn't for me. Maybe you get yelled at by an instructor or ATC, or you get way closer to an accident than you would have liked to have. Anything like that come to mind?
Usually with the controllers, when I was in my earlier stages of flying, for some reason, I was the guy who gave them more trouble than they gave me. So it wasn't the controllers. And my instructors never yelled at me. But I'd say one of the more scarier situation was when I was trying to practice the power-off stalls right before I got my license, somehow got myself into a spin.
You know, take your hands off everything and let the plane fly, or did you actually give it the correct input, or what was that like?
I'll say that I did the correct input, but I really have no idea. I don't remember what I did.
Right. What were your thoughts afterwards when you're heading back to after you recover? I mean, was your heart racing?
Well, I think it was, if I remember, and I was also, I was really scared. I realized how stupid I was because I realized I was only like 2,000 feet off the ground. That's why now, even when we go flying with students, I usually won't do any of these maneuvers until we're at least 4,000 or 5,000 feet off the ground now.
Mm-hmm. So 75% of students drop out or stop flying before they even get their license. What was the key for you to finish your training, do you think?
I think it was my parents pushing me to continuously improve with my flying. And even when I was 18 and I was kind of pulling away from flying, and I don't really know the exact reasons why, they were pushing me to continue. And what they ended up doing was I lost my part-time summer job, which I never should have had in the first place. And within a week of that, my parents had sent me back up to ATP.
An ATP type school, you think that was pretty key in your training?
Well, I think it could have been done at my school too. It doesn't have to be an ATP flight school. You don't have to go to a big flight school to get all these things done. It was just the quickest way for me to get what I needed done.
Right, absolutely. So in your training, do you have any of those aha moments that come to mind? Something where you were struggling with maybe a maneuver or landings, and your instructor's telling you something over and over, and you're like, I hear what you're saying. It makes sense what you're saying, but it's just not showing up in my flying, and then all of a sudden you get it. Anything like that come to mind?
You know, I don't really remember any of those moments from my early stages of training, but now on the professional level, different.
How so? Any aha moments as a professional pilot?
I'd say living up in Michigan, my first wintertime here, I always read about de-icing and icing on airplanes, and I never realized how dangerous it really can be. And there was one flight where I remember I was the first officer, and we saw something that looked a little bit glossy on the wing. It was a little bit shiny. It was early in the morning, and luckily the captain I was with, he said, let's go make sure that there's nothing on the wing. And I remember opening up the Airster doors, and on the King Air, the engines were still running, walking out of the ramp, putting my hand on the wing, and the wing just was solid ice all over the surface of the wing. That was probably my biggest aha moment that I've had that I can remember.
Yeah. What did the captain say to you?
I think he said, if I remember, that's why we always check it twice. That's why we never question it.
That is such a good takeaway. That's why we check things twice. That's, good, after I do a pre-flight, before Jason jumps in the plane with me, he always double checks to make sure the gas caps are on, double checks the oil, all those things. I mean, and that's, we make mistakes. We overlook things.
Well,
we don't understand the importance of things.
There was one big mistake that I remember making, and I flew with my friend Brian in his Piper Warrior one day. We went from Sarasota to the Bahamas. We were coming back from Nassau to Fort Lauderdale, and I remember we took some gas, and I remember we sunk the tank, but I never looked at the actual fuel caps.
And
we're about halfway across the Atlantic, maybe 70 miles away from land, and we look over at the right fuel cap, and it's hanging off sideways. It was never latched on all the way.
Did you guys lose a bunch of fuel in that process?
Luckily, we didn't, but we got pretty frightened pretty quick because it was getting darker, and there's really nowhere to land at that point.
A lot of people who listen to the Inspire Aviation podcast are people who are very early in their training, or they're the aspiring pilot. They're someone who's always wanted to. Maybe they didn't think it was for them, or they didn't really know where to start. What advice would you give to someone who's always dreamed of being a pilot but hasn't started their training yet?
I would definitely say, what are they waiting for with learning how to fly? And I have a bunch of students that were actually like that, and the biggest thing that they all say is they regret not starting to learn how to fly sooner in their life.
I think that's key, and for me it was almost, and that's part of the reason for this whole podcast, it's just the educational side. If we can provide some transparency into what training is really like, because I had no idea. I thought you had to be like my heroes, my childhood heroes like Chuck Yeager, Neil Armstrong. I thought that was what a pilot was. And I looked at myself, I'm like, I'm not that confident. I'm not that manly. Maybe this isn't for me.
I think that's the biggest difference thing is everyone thinks that you have to be this big, confident guy and always know what to do when it comes to flying. And that's just not the truth. There's no way you can know everything. The biggest thing that people don't realize is every single time you go flying, whether you're flying professionally, as an instructor or a student, you should always be learning something. That's probably the biggest deal there.
So we kind of talked about the aspiring pilot. What about someone who started their training but they stopped before they finished? What, maybe they ran out of funds. Maybe, maybe they had a scary experience, and they're
Thinking about the part of it that they ran out of the money part, what I would say is first figure out what you can afford, or over time how much you can save up, or if you know you can afford a little bit, what can you budget monthly to learn how to fly? Usually the flying clubs seem to have a cheaper way of flying per hour. And what you do is you find a flying club or a reasonable flight school, pick out your instructor and sit down with them and figure out what the cost of your training is going to be. Not whatever average they say their students end up completing, or not the national average, but where you are in your level with your training, and then add up how much that airplane's going to cost per hour, how much ground time you can expect, how much are your books going to cost, the medical, the check ride cost. Put that all into one, and from there, figure out if it's really affordable for you or not before you begin.
Absolutely.
There's no reason for you to begin something like flying if you can't afford it.
Yep. Yeah. And it's not that you won't be able to afford it. It's just you may need to do your – and I recommend this, and you and I have kind of – we're on the same lines as far as budgeting and finances, but figure it out ahead of time. You know, go into it with all your money saved. And I know there are so many discounts and – there's so much help you can get if you have, you know, FBOs will offer discounts. Flight instructors sometimes will offer discounts. If you can put X amount down, that you know, cash has a lot of power.
Yeah, and I think one of the other things that you can do and that everyone should do is, whether you are beginning your license or if you're stopping and getting back into it, go and do all of your ground training, like the M0A courses online. Do the written test prep. Do as much ground training as you can before you can begin your flying. And as long as you show up and you study what you're supposed to do beforehand, everything should be a lot easier than if you didn't.
Yeah, and it's, yeah. I think, too, a lot of people overlook, they think to be a pilot, you always have to be in the plane. And there's so much you can do now on the ground, even if you don't even have money for the course yet. I mean, the chair flying, going through, you know, the PHAC or the airplane flying handbook or reading a magazine or reading a book, just something now to get you moving forward. You know, you've got all these different ratings, and you're flying professionally, but in all that time, if you could look back at your training, is there anything that you would do differently?
I think what I would do is I would study 10 times harder than I really did, and take it a lot more seriously than I initially did also. And it happens so quick with the flying jobs. You think that you're going to maybe one day get a corporate flying job, and then all of a sudden it happens. The study that you should have been doing way ahead of time, you don't have it, so you're trying to make up for it.
So even at the professional level, so you're saying that just catches up with you?
It does. It definitely does.
So the reason Kyle and I know each other, at M0A.com, we have a CFI flight school referral program. And Kyle is someone who uses our, you know, of course he's got his corporate job, but he also does flight instruction. And really he's built a phenomenal business in a very short amount of time. So my next couple questions to Kyle are going to be more about, you know, seeing training through the eyes of a CFI. So Kyle, as a CFI, what advice, and this, you know, this might be the same, or is there anything different? As a CFI, what advice would you give to someone who just started their flight training?
It's kind of the same as what I was talking about if you stop your training halfway through, but just find the right either flight school and flying club and make sure you take the time to find the right flight instructor for you. Complete as much of that ground training as you can and the written test prep before you begin your lesson.
Absolutely. You know, and again, as we talked about, with 75% of students not finishing, what are the areas you see students failing the most?
Luckily, I don't see students failing so much. Usually it's frustration moments for them.
Mm-hmm.
Either the student gets in their own head so bad that they knock themselves down, or what can happen is they don't think that they have to study. They don't make the time to study either. Before you know it, the instructor's getting upset, so is the student. And if you don't fix that problem quick, the student's never going to study.
Right. Yes, I mean, and you mentioned something interesting. You said you don't have too many students fail. When we have a huge, I guess almost like an epidemic in general aviation, where we haven't done a good job teaching student pilots, we haven't done a good job being ambassadors. You know, you talked about that CFI, that first CFI you had that kind of held your hand through some tough moments. So as a instructor, what are some of the things that you do different? I know you mentioned kind of forcing students to fly, but what are some of the things that you practice and offer that help your students stay at it?
I think one of the biggest things is you have to be honest with the student from the second that you meet them. You can't go and say, you know, that average time is only 50 hours, but the national average is really 60 or more, unless you can actually prove that with your training.
Mm-hmm.
What ends up happening is it seems like there's three or four different times where students get frustrated in their training. So you have to figure out a way to keep them motivated, whether it's taking them up in the tower so when they meet these controllers, they realize that the controllers aren't as scary as they sound on the radio, or taking them out to an airport to a restaurant, something they've always imagined doing, showing them what aviation can really do for them.
So we got Kyle's perspective as far as what he offers his students, but if you're a student, this is something you should be looking for in your CFI if you're not having open dialogue. That's so important. I mean, you know, last episode we talked about people who, you know, felt like they should be soloing, or people who felt like they should be farther along, or were questioning their relationship with their CFI. Always start with a conversation with that CFI. You know, tell them your frustrations and ask for specifics. You know, I feel like I should be soloing. What specifically do you need to see from me before we solo? And, you know, I'm sure Kyle can attest to, a good CFI wants to have that conversation with you. And if someone doesn't, then it's probably your clue that they're not a good CFI. So, Kyle, you've talked about flying clubs, and this is kind of, and I really think flying clubs are making a huge push in the training environment and aviation in general. Can you talk a little bit more about why you would recommend a flying club over a flight school, or maybe some of the advantages that a flight club or a flying club is able to offer?
I think one of the biggest advantages right away is the fact that the flying club, for the most part, they're not actually trying to make money off the airplanes or the flight instructor. They typically don't even take a cut from an instructor either. So whatever money the instructor makes, he's actually getting cash from the student, which is great. You know, you have instructors that start to pad students for flight time at some places because they realize, I'm only making X amount of dollars, so I have to make a little bit more. And that's kind of a dangerous thing that happens, but it does happen at flight schools that I've seen a lot. And that's why it's nice about independent instructors at most of the flying clubs. And the other thing is, with the actual airplanes, if they're only charging just enough to break even on the cost of the airplane, it's probably the lowest cost you can find that equipment at anywhere in your area.
No, absolutely. And I know a lot of people don't even think about that as being an option. They just think, okay, I'm going to do flight instruction, I need to go to a flight school. You know, and for those of you who listened to the episode with Jamie Beckett, I mean, that's part of his big AOPA initiative, is to help grow and build flying clubs. So if you missed that, you can go back to the last episode with Jamie Beckett. I believe there's some links there in the show notes. So, Kyle, if I want to find out more about what you do and your instruction and your flying clubs, or maybe if I'm in the Lansing area and I'm looking for a good CFI, where can I find more of you?
You can just go to the iFlyPlanes website, you can email me, or you can call me. And even if you're not going to want to fly, I'm happy to answer the questions that you have. We also have a new blog that we're starting called trueflying.com. It's spelled exactly how it sounds. And what our students are doing is they're writing different posts, because most schools make their own blog postings, but they don't talk about the actual experience that the students have and the truth about there are going to be good days and bad days and days that you wish that you weren't flying, and then you're going to have the awesome days where everything actually clicks. So you can find that at trueflying.com as well.
And I apologize for the abrupt end to Kyle's interview. Normally, as I'm interviewing someone, we say goodbye to each other, but Kyle and I got off on a tangent and started talking about something else, and then I realized we didn't kind of record a closing of the conversation. So at any rate, if there's anything myself, M0A, if there's anything that Kyle can do for you, whether you are a student pilot, you've always wanted to get into flight training, if you're in the Lansing area and you're looking for a good CFI, all Kyle's information will be in the show notes. So reach out to him or the M0A team.
My name is Scott Carson, and I'm here to inspire aviation.